Kevin, could you, having been around teams that have won, learned how to win in your past, your own resume, could you comment on what you saw with your team this year, say, from training camp to now, in that context of learning how to win and actually winning?
Well, I think, we sat here at the beginning of the season and we talked about the opportunity to earn that right to have a chance. And, one thing I guess that I'm most proud of this group throughout the year is the resiliency they showed and the commitment they showed to wanting to, earn that right. They didn't ever take anything for granted that, it was just going to happen. And I think we kept on building upon that. And, again, like every team that does have ultimate success, they learn how to handle themselves. They learn how to handle the situations in front of them. They learn how to struggle and deal with adversity. They learn how to handle their day. That was kind of the mindset and the theme that this group, right up until the end, really was its hallmark. So that just doesn't happen naturally. That's a part of growth, and that's a part of understanding how difficult this league can be, how unforgiving it can be, and how important it is that throughout the course of whether it's 82 or 100 games that you have to learn how to handle.
Paul, it might be a better question for maybe June or July or later on, but when you look back at where your team was to training camp, to the regular season success, to getting into the Final Four, what stands out from your standpoint?
The leadership tone set by Blake Wheeler and a bigger veteran group, Bufflin and Shifley as captains, but the Brian Little player that's on our group that doesn't get mentioned a lot in the leadership group, and Tyler Myers, just their determination to push the group. So on a day, as Kevin says, handle your day, it's handled by those veteran men, that we would be able to survive the season, the injuries that we had, without a dip in our consistency in our play, that someone else would have picked up the slack, if you will, on those injuries. So the investment is there, and there has to be certainly a perceived payoff for that investment. They have to feel that they're good enough to keep that drive each and every day, which really defined our year. I think there was a belief here now that, and then there was a belief over the 2 years prior that eventually we were going to get to the point that we would be a good hockey team. And I think from the training camp on, while not taking anything for granted, there was a belief by those veteran drivers that we could become a good team this year. And the work that those men did daily had a huge impact on us becoming a pretty darn good team.
Kevin, we hear from Trouba today and other guys that have their contracts coming up over the next year or so. Everybody still wants to be a part of this. So I guess from your standpoint, from day one to now, how big of a bonus is that for you that this thing's going in the right direction?
Well, I think everyone feels a part of it. Like the reason that you hear that sentiment is again, it kind of goes back to what Paul said here, a genuine belief of where we have come to, and these players are the reason why. The coaches do a great job on a daily basis of putting structure in place and putting a plan in place and putting the path in front of the players. But this game is about them, and this is about how hard they play, how hard they sacrifice, how hard it is to get to a certain point. And I think that at one point in time, they're all young players. They're all learning about what it takes. They graduate on to veteran players, and somewhere in the middle, they figure out exactly how tough it is, of a league it is to have ultimate success. And when they have a group they feel comfortable with, and when they have a group of people that they've grown with, that they want to be a part of it. And you know, so we'll do our best to, you know, sharpen our pencils and do as good a work as we can on the business side of it to make sure everybody, you know, feels like they're a part of it on a fairness of a contract and also build within the constraints.
Paul, on Sunday night, you switched out a sixth of your skater group. What, three guys. What was the mentality that went into that? And secondly, how hard was that conversation with Toby Enstrom?
There was a bit of a theme that anybody that came out for a day or two or came in fresh had a major impact on the game. Nick Ehler's best game by far of that series was after he had a tough night with the flu prior to game four or game three when he'd gotten sick and he'd come back in. We were looking for some legs and for some jump. And the guys that come out, I didn't have a problem with their game. It wasn't an obvious somebody's costing us games or failing, but I felt that we were looking for a little extra jump and that we needed it at that time. Yeah, the conversation with all three of them is not easy. Especially when you factor the things that Toby would have played with over my time here, the number of injuries that he's played with, broken bones and fought through. It was a difficult conversation to have, but you have to have those conversations when you believe what you're doing is right.
Kevin, as far as Paul Stastny goes, how hard can what kind of numbers can you make work with him? How hard do you have to work to try and make him that he's not a rental for this club?
Yeah, you know, it's certainly you know, something that, again, we had a great exit meeting, we had some great conversations, and I think you know, again, I don't get a chance to really talk to the players too much on a daily basis, so it was a great experience just sitting there talking to him here today in the exit meeting and hearing about his decision-making process in coming here, and hear about you know, his thought process after being here, and then hearing about his thought process moving forward. So, you know, again, there's lots of business to be done here. There's you know, first and foremost, we have to find out what the cap is going to be, you know, which that'll eventually get set, and we'll find out what our working parameters are, and then you know, like I say, we've got a lot of work ahead of us to. You know, from the business side of it to try and make as much of that be a part of it. And it's amazing how a player like that can come into your lineup and feel like he's been part of your lineup since, you know, forever. And it's that type of, you know, chemistry and symmetry that really, you know, it's a testament to what kind of person that he is, and again, how tight our group was.
Paul, we've heard from teams in the past who've had success one year and then dipped the next, and they said they weren't prepared again for the grind that it would take to get back to where they were. To your point about your leadership, Blake Wheeler and a number of other players came in here and talked about next year. You know, they know how hard it's going to be and how hard they will have to work to get back to that. One, what's it like for you to hear that as a coach, them kind of taking care of that? And two, how does that bode for this team regaining something like this next year?
Well, it's a real serious topic because there's enough evidence to say that it's possible, right? And we saw it with some good young teams that felt that they had crossed a threshold. So I would answer it maybe in three different pieces. The first would be, very, very focused veteran group that's in their prime and value that. You know, the drivers, and I know, and clearly we are excited about the Lion-A's and Ehlers of the world and Kyle Connor, brilliant young players. But the drivers of our team, you know, Blake, now Mark, Dustin, are in their prime, and they need to make the most of it now. So they're not looking for, hey, we're going to be a great team for 6 years. They're pushing for it next year. The second would be piece to it would be the exit meetings. While positive, we're wanting more. So I actually would have suggested there were more positive kind of concerns in the exit meetings 4 years ago that making the playoffs was such a big deal here because it hadn't happened, that there was a sense of relief, and they were different this year. Certainly positive. They like each other. They care for each other. They like being here. They like this team. But there's a sense that give us a couple of weeks rest and maybe we could get back to work again. There's an urgency to it. And the last is that we would be aware as a staff of the prep it's going to need to take and the focus that we'll need to bring to bear early in camp next year.
Kevin, I've noticed a lot of times you like to take care of your business ahead of time. So Nick Ehlers would be an example. Brian Little would be an example. I know you've got a lot of on your plate this summer, but how much of a priority would getting someone like Blake Wheeler or Patrick Laine or even Kyle Connor onto extensions, how much of a priority would that be for this year?
Well, you know, certainly, again, they're never far from your mind, you know, those type of opportunities or type of situations. But we've evolved as a team that from a standpoint that our summers are very real as far as the challenges that do come into play. And that happens when you have really good players that, you know, you've got tough decisions to make. You've got, again, trying to make numbers work in the short term and the long term. You know, these are things that are very real. So what, you know, again, might have been easy in the past just to say, let's do a bunch of future contracts. Ironically, there are actually, as weird as it sounds, there's cap mechanisms in place that I could probably sit here and talk to you about with regards to tagging room and different things like that that, you know, I had to experience when I was running the cap with the Blackhawks that you guys wouldn't, you don't really want to understand, but it involves future contracts. So there's lots of little intricacies that you have to make sure you don't get tripped up on and just get overzealous with some things. But, you know, part of the summer, you know, deals with arbitration. We have a lot of players that have contracts coming up that are ARB eligible, you know, so there's a process that's going to be in place there. You know, don't write articles that the sky is falling if we have five or six guys, you know, filing for arbitration. We've been through that process. It's about getting contracts in place and different things like that. So, you know, that those are the mechanisms that are in place for the CBA. But, you know, we only have a set number of dollars to work with, you know, and whatever the cap is going to be, that's the set number of dollars that, you know, you have to try and figure out. We will have a couple of players with performance bonuses still next year that, you know, we're going to have to take into consideration. We were fortunate this year that we were able to get to the point that we did without having to spend any cap dollars of next year, because it was important for us to, you know, while we wanted to give ourselves the best opportunity to win this year, you don't want it to come at the expense of having to sacrifice things when you know that there's going to be, you know, some contract questions moving forward. So all that will be factored into and talked about. You know, we've had, you know, different discussions with different agents at even different points in time, and the agents have all been so respectful of the run that we were on. And, you know, they're close with their players too, and they're all about wanting to win a championship, and that's what the players, you know, are about. And I echo Paul's statements. I remember the exit meetings, you know, after we made the playoffs, and we talked about it, and there was a lot of, this was a great year, this was awesome, this was so exciting. This year there was a lot of, you know, I wish I'd have scored that goal. I wish I could have, you know, had that opportunity. It, you know, it's right there. And you know, there's a genuine hurt. Like, it's going to take a few days, probably more, to really, you know, come to grips with, you know, just the emotion that goes into, you know, what we've just gone through, and that's good. I think that's really good. I think it's, you know, my message to a lot of the guys was take a couple days off or a couple weeks off, enjoy your families, and, you know, let's get ready.
Paul, now that the season is done, are you able to tell us or give us any insight into what kind of injuries some guys might have been playing through? Steve Mason said he was getting cortisone shots. Nick Ehlers talked about having the flu and being in bed for 2 days in Vegas. If not, maybe specific players and injuries, can you just give us an idea of the kind of injuries guys had?
We dealt with the big bulk of our major injuries in the year. And so there's some maintenance issues that came off those guys going in. We probably have four or five players that will do MRIs here over the next day or two, the next week. And then decisions will have to be made on the best way to rehab those players, whether it's we don't have, as of right now, and Dmitry Kulikov is going to get looked at again, but we don't have anybody that would have, even if it went to a surgical option, that would be any issue for training camp.
Yeah.
So there's nothing long term there. So we're talking about scopes, getting things cleaned up if we need to. The decision still has to be made, shoulders, knees, things like that. But none of it would be beyond a 4 week, real quick turnaround.
Was Toby Enstrom dealing with broken ribs?
No, he had dealt with broken bones in his feet during the year, but nothing broken.
And then just one for Kevin. You signed Steve Mason last summer. With the salary cap constraints that you may be facing, obviously his salary as a backup might be more than a backup would traditionally. He obviously was here earlier, lamented sort of what is kind of a lost season for him with all these injuries and taking on a different role. With all that being said, previously you've used a buyout, used it on Mark Stewart, for example. Would that be something you'd be considering, or you have every expectation that he'll come and compete for work in the fall?
Yeah, no, I don't sit here and anticipate that a buyout is a course of action I would take with Steve Mason. Steve Mason's a capable number one goaltender, in the National Hockey League, and he signed with us, obviously knowing that, and we were very upfront with him. We said this was going to be about winning. Like, it was whether it was him or whether it was going to be, whoever it was, there was going to be competition to win. So, Steve was a real pro, and I've seen a shell of our schedule next year. We're going to need, you're going to need some goaltending. You're going to need some people to back things up. We have the Finland trip next year that, basically takes probably 8 or 9 days out of your schedule where you're not playing any games. So, there's going to be a payback at some point in time, somewhere during the season there. So, Steve's a real pro, and I think that there's a lot left for him with respect to being a number one goaltender in the National Hockey League.
Kevin, would you and Paul actually as well, would you maybe characterize the message you gave the players today? You shared a bit of what they've said to you. Could you tell maybe us the kinds of things you left with them or asked them to do?
Well, it again would be clearly different for each player. There would be a number of very, very short meetings. The Blake Wheelers of the world, players that were incredibly consistent in my mind, had kind of maximized what they were able to do. All our meetings start with fitness testing at the start of the year. How did you come in? How did you play? How did you assess your play? There are a number of players that had made some really exceptionally good progress, but we think there's more, quite a bit more there. And a lot of that is tapping into that. And so we'll talk about guys from 20 to 25, 27, that they still have an awful lot of room with their bodies to grow and improve. And we want to be sure that a good year statistically isn't construed as the cap or the top of their game, that there's an awful lot more to be had. And then there's a group of guys, as there always is, where there's some role definition in their mind, where they see themselves, where we see them, what's available for them here going forward, and those kind of conversations to have. But they were quick, to be honest with you. The quickest ones, some ones are the most direct, but very positive.
For me, it was, again, we do ours separately. So Paul meets with the guys, and Larry Zinger and I, meet, with all the players individually. There's like Paul said, there's different conversations that morph into different things for each individual. But, for us, it's just really about, understanding that you're going to have to earn it again. Like, it's all about for us, for them, taking the time off this summer to recharge the bodies, but recharge the minds. And then, you know, never lose that little piece of hurt that, you know, that is there for what that is, because to me that's the instruction that goes on with this. You talk about experience and you talk about playoff experience, and you've got game seven experience now. You've got, you know, finishing a series early, and you know, you've got, you know, losing out something that, you know, deeply, deeply hurts you. So they all got a little more hardened, I think, in the last couple of weeks. And, you know, that's something that, you know, that's going to help them grow as a player.
Question for Paul. It seems to me in hindsight that last summer must have been a major summer of homework. There was a new power play focused on the right-handed shots. There was a new penalty kill. You wanted to cut down the seam passes. You did that. The forecheck had a lot of commitment to back pressure, so those rush chances went down as well. A lot of work went into some major systemic things. And what's the next step? Is there that kind of room for more homework this summer leading into next year?
Well, the answer is yes. There's a model of best practices that we follow here. We'll find out who's had the most success in each component of the game, find out why they've had that success. Fortunately, we're in a number of those components now. Or when you do the top five in each area of the game, our name pops up in an awful lot of one of those. So there's some things that we feel we've made good progress on that we'd want to continue that. But you're always looking for that edge. The game, in my mind, is changing more rapidly each year, certainly since I've come back, but from 2006 on, when the obstruction rules changed and the entire game goes to speed. So you're seeing more and more simplicity come into the game. If the game is moving that fast, there can't be four or five things you have to process while it's moving that fast. Our if we were to sum up the entire body of work that we did last summer, is how do we simplify this thing down so that we can go as fast as we possibly can? And then we'll be looking for those adjustments that we want to make very early in camp and very early put them in and continue on with that program.
Kevin, just sorry, Kevin, specifically with respect to Trouba and negotiations, we know some of the challenges that went along with it last time. Are you optimistic or confident that maybe the tone surrounding the negotiations this time will be a little bit different than previous time?
You know, I think that, you know, again, there was a tone, I guess, surrounding those in the past. And like, I thought Jacob and Josh were fantastic for us. And I think that I think they feel the same way. I think they're a big part of why and how we got to, you know, where we have gotten. And as a player, I think you want to feel like you make a difference. And I do think that that Jacob and you know, Josh and that group there, I think they do feel they make a difference. So, you know, the business side's the business side. It'll take care of itself. But again, I really believe that, you know, this group here feels strongly about this group here, and that they like each other, and that, you know, again, that's an important, you know, first component. But I think that there's one thing that when you start to have some success in, you know, in the on-ice product is everybody can see and identify where and why you're having some success. You know, when you talk about, you know, a building process or anything like that, and you don't see any results or see any benefits or see, you know, what's right in front of you or what you know could be right in front of you, then that's very difficult. But I think these players, you know, are you know that they're a big part of it individually and collectively. So we'll get at the business side of it relatively quickly here. We've got next week, I've got draft combines. The following week, we have pro meetings. So, you know, again, the summer side of things is well underway with respect to draft meetings and that. But, you know, again, today was an important day, you know, you know, for me, my hope is that, you know, next year we don't have to have exit meetings.
You have a number of UFAs. How do they fit into your plans for next season?
So, you know, obviously we touched on Paul a little bit, and you know, we'll see where that aspect goes. But we knew that one going in, obviously, when we made the trade, that, you know, there's going to be, a feeling out process between the two sides, and then the harsh realities of having to sharpen our pencils to see if we can make it work. So we'll deal with that. You know, we've had some brief conversations with some of the other, you know, UFAs. Today really wasn't a day of definitive thought processes with any of the other UFAs. There was some soul searching to see, you know, do you want to play? Where do you feel? What's your career path type thing for some of these guys? And we had some good conversations there. So I imagine we'll circle back with all of them as the summer goes on, and have a more definitive thought process for all of them.
This is for either you or both of you.
I'll make sure you're good.
A lot of the people you talk to in this city feel that this was one of the biggest moments that this city has ever had. The whiteout, the party, everything. What did it feel like to see that happen the way that it happened? And what does it feel like to know that you were very central in giving this city what a lot of people think is one of its greatest moments?
You probably get some real good quotes if Paul talked about it more than me, but... It's special. It's exciting to see the fans as involved and emotionally invested as they are. It's a proud moment because, you know, this is my hometown. This is my town. This is what I feel so happy for, you know, the people around it. But I think it shows what we all know and what a great place it is to live, and what a passionate fan base is really like when it gets ignited as it did. And I think it is special. You know, like the interesting theme in a lot of the conversations, you know, and whether it was Mason or whether it was Kulikov, whether it was Hendricks, you know, and I mentioned those guys specifically because they're all brought in. It was Stastny as well. Like, they talk about the family feel. They talk about how, you know, their wives were able to be close with other wives, and how their, you know, the players were able to be together. Now, you know, to me, I think this is a unique advantage that we have in the city of Winnipeg. Like, it is a small town, or a small city. You don't have to, you know, go 2 hours out of your way to go to your buddies for dinner, or, you know, your wives get together. And I think when they're here, and I think going through the time that we did, the sacrifices that the players have to make, I really think that the core of the families really became united. And, you know, like, when you talk about, and I'm so thankful we've embraced a lot of the alumni of our, you know, of the past, you know, Winnipeg teams and everything, because that's exactly what they talked about. They talked about how their families loved it here. They talked about how, you know, everybody was always together. And I don't think you get that in a big city. I think, you know, that is distinctly and uniquely, you know, part of our Winnipeg Jet culture.
There's lots of good quotes there. You guys don't need me on that one.
Go ahead, Paul.
Thought on what Vegas is teaching the rest of the league on how to build a team and how they play, Paul, Kevin, and Paul.
You know, for me, I think that Vegas is, what Vegas is showing you is that, you know, as a team, you can achieve anything. As a group of players that are individuals, you probably don't achieve, you know, your ultimate goals. And, you know, right from the moment that group has gotten together, you know, the management staff did a fantastic job of you know, taking players that obviously, you know, are talented, but obviously are, you know, committed athletes. But I think the coaching staff and I think, you know, the players, you know, really came together and bonded as a group because, you know, but I think it just shows that, you know, it is the ultimate team sport.
They were very consistent with their game, but they were right from the very start, right? A group that comes in and full buy-in, and that's not that other teams don't have it, but it's they played the exact same game in so many ways from October to the game now. when you look at the structure, the systems, the things that they ran, they were identical all the way through the year. And why not? Once they had success that no one expected them to have, it was ingrained in what they did. So they played an exceptionally consistent game and really an evenly played game. They rolled their bench for the most part. Clearly the first line plays more than their fourth, but their back end minutes were pretty consistent with what they did. They had a match that worked for them, and their goaltender cleaned up anything that didn't go particularly well for them. So they were very, very consistent with their game.
How would you describe what Toby Enstrom's given the organization these 11 seasons, Kevin?
You know, Toby's a special player in this organization, and regardless of how things move forward, whether he chooses to play again, and whether there's an opportunity to play here, that chapter of things is still to be written. But Toby was the first person we signed to an extension. When the franchise moved here, obviously we signed Andrew Ladd to a contract because he needed to have a contract signed. But Toby had a contract and was going to be coming to unrestricted free agency, and he was the first player that said, I want to believe in this process, and I do believe in this process. And a lot of that had to do with Don Baisley, I think the foundation that was put in place, by the WHA Jets and the NHL Jets 1.0. Like, there was a feeling that this could be, a really, good place to play and a good place to be a part of. And Toby was one of the first guys to buy into that. And he was at that time a 50-point defenseman, in the National Hockey League, an elite player, and could have chosen to go in other directions. But the way Toby has sacrificed his body at different points in time, as Paul mentioned, playing with maybe multiple broken bones at a different point in time, even this year, because going back to the conversation that I had with him, around this time, but probably even a little bit earlier last summer, about wanting to keep this group together, so there's a lot of selfless acts that went along the way with what he did on the ice, and all because he'd hoped at one point that it would lead to the eventual success. Great. Thanks everyone, have a great summer. Thank you.